Hi. How are you?
Good morning. Welcome. It's Tuesday, the 9th of July, and it's a delight to have you with us on this Tuesday morning, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we are thrilled to have you here. We have a great panel. We have a lot to talk about, and we'll get to it in just a moment. A little programming note, or maybe actually a big programming note, is that tomorrow morning, we will be broadcasting from the from Tanglewood in Lenox in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. You can't leave one out without the other. You can't leave one out. It is in both Lenox and Stockbridge. And if you just say one, people get really mad at you. So Tanglewood in Lenox and Stockbridge will be there tomorrow, broadcasting from the Lindy Center. And we're very excited. It's going to be a great morning. We're going to have Andres Nelsons. We're going to have the new CEO, Chad Smith, with us. Don Upshaw is going to be with us from the TMC. We're going to have many guests from the Berkshires, from wonderful arts organizations in the Berkshires. It'll be a magical morning from Lenox and Stockbridge. And where we are actually going to be, I don't know if that is in Lenox or Stockbridge, but I think we should probably chart it out and find out by tomorrow.
Maybe some could be in one side and some could be on
Wouldn't
the other
side. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah, we'll do it. Normally, we used to do it in the what they call the press porch, but I think they are using that as a rehearsal space now. And we have a better connection in the new Lindy Center, which opened in 2019. So we'll be broadcasting from there, and we're very excited, and we look forward to broadcasting from Tanglewood tomorrow. So please join us on a musical adventure tomorrow morning, beginning at 9 o'clock, 9 to noon, here on the round table. And we won't have a panel tomorrow, but because if we had a panel, then we wouldn't talk about anything else. So we're going to we'll forego the panel tomorrow, and then we'll be back with a panel on Thursday. So don't worry. We'll save all that good stuff to talk about on Thursday. Let me introduce the group to you. Chief of Staff and Vice President for Strategy and Policy at Bard College, Malia DuMont. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Great to be here.
Great to have you here. Partner with the Albany Law Firm of Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert. Good morning.
Happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you here as well. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller in the house.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Always enjoy having you here. And our good friend Mike Spain, former Times Union Associate Editor. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
All right. Everyone's happy, so we'll get going and take care of that. See if you're still happy after this. We have a lot to talk about, and we'll get to the stories of the day here. It's all complicated, isn't it? I don't know. This story seems to be, you know what story I'm talking about, and that would be the President of the United States and his staying in the race or stepping aside. He has made it quite clear that he's staying in the race, and it seems as if that is pretty much the final word for him.
For now.
We're done. This is good. So, this from the New York Times, that President Biden is leveraging his defiance to try to stem Democratic defections. And in private and in public, the president made clear he holds all the cards when determining his political future. And so then he still has Democratic critics. And the question is, can he get them to come over to his side? Some pretty stark, frank language yesterday from the president when he called Morning Joe, not this Joe, that other Joe, and talked to Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski and said, "I'm not going anywhere." And then said, "You want to run somebody else? Run them at the convention. Let's see. Come on, bring it on. Let's go." And that seems to be the new tactic from the president. This brings up two, I think, very interesting points. One is that it is obvious that the president has dug in his heels, that he has looked at polling, he has looked at support amongst other Democrats, and has said, "I'm in this." The other interesting thing is, why did it take 10 days? Why did it take so long for him to dig in? Why was he not doing this the day after the debate? And instead of the eerie quiet that came following that, why did this take so long? And so that's a question that's out there. And then there's a lot of other questions out there, like the doctor who came in 8 times, who is the Parkinson's expert. And there's many reasons for – apparently there are many potential reasons for that. And that wasn't clearly explained at the press conference yesterday or at the press briefing, which got very heated. And so there's a lot going on, but let us talk about his emphatic declarations that he will not exit the presidential race and sending this message to potential wayward Democrats. Any criticisms going forward damage the party's chances against Donald Trump, because this is Joe Biden against the liberal elite. Sienna.
As I roll
by the way, that was a great eye roll. That was a good eye roll.
Joe Biden against... I'm just really of the opinion that, first, I did not agree when he announced his nomination in the beginning. I wanted him to pass the torch to someone else, but when he even announced. So I've been consistent on this. The debate just solidified it for me. However, I understand how big of an election this is. And so, to me, it's not Joe Biden versus Trump. To me, it's Trump versus democracy. And so, for those reasons, I can, you know, boister myself up, you know, push, get out there and say, let's vote for Biden. I know what we need to do. However, I feel like when we just talk about Joe Biden as our nominee, there's a lot, in my opinion, there's a lot of ego there to think that he's the only person that could beat Donald Trump, because I do believe that is Trump versus democracy. He did a great job these last 4 years. He's overseeing like 2 wars. I get it, but it's concerning to me. And I don't think it's unfair for people to be concerned. That's all I'm saying.
JP.
I think we're at a really unique moment. We are witnessing history right now. We witnessed history at that debate. And I believe that that debate performance is what in many ways will define President Biden's legacy and what people will remember about him. And that debate date being 7 weeks before the convention was designed, in my belief, by people inside the White House to give him the opportunity to have an off-ramp to exit the race. There is no other explanation why you would put up a declining president 7 weeks before the convention to have a debate performance like that. My belief is that there are people within the White House that are patriots, that really care about this country and care about Joe Biden. They've seen episodes like this over the last 6 months to a year and know that he is in significant decline. And so they put him up for that debate 7 weeks ahead of the convention to allow for an off-ramp. And I think that he is likely to step aside. I believe Joe Biden is a good man. He has shown that he has made good decisions over his lifetime, decisions that are in the best interest of the country. This is not an easy decision to make. And so I think within the next week to 10 days, you will likely see Joe Biden step aside.
I want to get to everybody else, but don't you think I thought that, too. I thought exactly how you think. But I think in the last maybe 36 hours, my thinking hasn't changed. But when we talk about the practicality of it, I think that if he's going to do it, there should have been like some little tiny, you use the word off ramp, but some little tiny thing that he kept a crack open to give himself an out. And he doesn't, I mean, this is ironclad, and I find that to be interesting.
It's not ironclad. It's going to be the top story that everybody's talking about until the convention. He's going to have a press conference at NATO. He had a performance on Morning Joe yesterday and a performance with George Stephanopoulos on Friday that didn't watch that and say, oh, that's a different Joe Biden than I saw at the debate. No, that's the same Joe Biden you saw at the debate. You're going to see the same Joe Biden at the press conference. And there's a good possibility that the Joe Biden you see at the press conference could possibly be worse than what you saw on Morning Joe and on Stephanopoulos and at the debate. So this story is not going away. The White House press corps has really awakened, and you see, wow, you see a press that is actually questioning Corinne Jean-Pierre and spent the entire hour yesterday. I watched the press conference, the entire hour on one topic, which is the number of times that the Parkinson's doctors have been to the White House. So just because Joe Biden says he wants this to go away doesn't mean that it's going to go away. This is going to continue to be the top story until he steps aside.
Malia.
Oh, man. Yeah. So this is one reason. I mean, I really can't stand presidential campaign politics. I never liked them. I try to, I don't typically watch the debates. I don't find most presidential campaign politics to be at all indicative of how someone will actually proceed in office. Right? Campaigns are different from governing. And we've seen that over and over and over again. And yeah, he had a terrible performance in the debate. The immediate hysteria that followed from that, as if a debate performance somehow translates directly into how he's going to govern or how he has been governing, driven by pundits, driven by the 24-hour news cycle, I think it that was unnecessary and a little bit unfair. Now, since then, you're right, Joe, he didn't respond quickly enough to that. So he should be able to manage the party and manage the situation. But I don't, we've got to go to a break.
I was just going to interrupt and say, I mean, the thing that I keep struggling with, and I'm interested, just to tag on what you're saying, and I apologize for interrupting, but because he didn't act within the 7 to 10 days, you think, I thought, well, he's not able to. Like, he would if he could.
That's not what I thought.
Okay.
I thought that nobody except, the majority leader of the Senate is not calling for him to step down. Like, people who are the major pillars of the party are not calling for him to step down.
Well, I don't think Mr. Freeze would, but okay.
So I think maybe he was, maybe he misjudged how long the, I think it's loud, it's vocal, but fringe elements of the party and far left journalists are the ones who are calling for him to step. That's what I think. And most people are concerned about him, but this whole story about the neurologist is totally blown out of proportion and is inaccurate as well. I mean, we just saw a story a couple months ago about how the Donald Trump White House drastically misused White House doctors and had them treating all kinds of people. But that's always been the case. The doctors who come to the White House don't only treat the president. And I think they came out with a statement that the neurologist has been there, yes, every month to treat all the other people there. And Biden has only seen him once. Now, maybe that's a complete lie. But I don't think that his people set him up to be humiliated at the debate in the hopes that he would like have some kind of off ramp. That to me, it feels like a conspiracy theory. Kind of like clearly he didn't do as well as anyone hoped or wanted. But that wouldn't be the way that you want a president to hand the baton to someone else if that's what they were setting him up for. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any preparation around that. And all the people who are calling for him to step down, I don't see, like, who are they putting forward? What is the actual solution here? I don't hear actual solutions from people who are calling on him to step aside.
Mike Spain.
Well, if President Biden had intended to only do one term, and there is ample evidence that that was the message being communicated 4 years ago, I'll be a transitional president, I'll restore norms, and that will be my role. If that was his intention all along, it would have been difficult because he would have been a lame duck president out of the gate. And in order for him to be effective as a president, and I think he has been, and successful as a president, as I think he has been, he would need to campaign and behave in a way that he was going to seek another term, and then late in the game switch gears, if that was a strategy. So, you know, maybe that explains why there's such reticence about doing it under these circumstances. I don't know. But under just to approach your point, Joe, about the 10 days of silence, let's say, do you think it's possible that, and there was a holiday weekend involved and, you know, the Camp David and the family, yada, 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 that there was any real thoughtful consideration by Biden and the people closest to him on whether stepping down or stepping out of the, you know, giving up the candidacy and stepping aside for reelection was really seriously considered? Or was it a crisis a period where they were thinking about the best strategy to survive and stay the candidate and win the race? And I don't know the answer to that, but based on the last 36 hours, as you say, Joe, it looks like whatever the pros and cons were, somebody has convinced him or at least affirmed for him who, if Biden believed he could do it, and said, go ahead and do it. You've beat the odds before, Uncle Joe or Dad or whatever, Grandpa, and go ahead and go out and show them all off. And it seems like that is what they're doing now. They're trying to make the best out of a real big mess and keep Joe on top of the ticket.
All right. A lot of follow-up questions to that, and we will get into those, plus your questions coming up. We welcome you to write to us, panel@wamc.org. We will return after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Malia Dumont, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain. Welcome all. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll get to those letters in just a moment. So anybody have any comments on what other panelists said that they would like to get into?
Oh, I mean, I can just reiterate what I said. I think the issue with the debate was that it was very hard to watch. And it wasn't just him performing poorly at a debate. Obama performed poorly at his first debate. It was that he seemed like he was not as well as he could be. I mean, as someone with an elderly parent, I understand what that looks like. And I understand how stubborn sometimes people can be when their life is changing and their memory is going away. And that's frustrating for them. And sometimes the way he sounded on Morning Joe and on some, it sounded like, it reminded me of that, like, obstinate, kind of stubborn, like, no, I'm not changing. I can do this. I can do this. We know you can. You did. But are you the best solution? That's my concern.
The other thing about so we've been hearing during that 10 days about how he would be doing more off-the-cuff events, he would be doing more interviews, he'd be doing, and one of the things that struck me about the, and feel free to tell me I'm being petty, but one of the things that struck me about the, about that appearance on Morning Joe is that he was obviously reading. Number one. And number two, he kept on saying, well, it says here on the paper that I did this, 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 and this. Well, to me, that's really no different than a teleprompter, because it's radio and you can't hear it.
Phone.
I mean,
yeah.
Look, ladies and gentlemen, we're all on a teleprompter.
Can you back that up a little bit?
That's right. Exactly. JP's showing his script. No, I just think, it isn't... And I don't know. Here's my question to the panel. Without any agenda whatsoever, which is simply, okay, so you're Joe Biden. You're digging in your heels. We're in. We're going. A decision has been made. Full steam ahead. Let's just say 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 8 weeks. There's another blip.
Could be this afternoon and after the NATO press conference.
Correct. And then what? I mean, at least if it happens this afternoon, you still have the time.
Yeah, you do have time. Yeah.
But after that, anything after the convention, you don't. And then what do you do?
And that's what I think is happening right now. I don't think that leadership is coming out and having these large conference saying out loud that I don't support Joe Biden. They're all supporting Joe Biden because they know the right way to do this is private conversations. And that's the right way to do it, to honor his legacy. And I think that's why we're not hearing from everyone saying, no, we don't support Joe Biden. Yes, we support him. And they're working behind the scenes to see what the best solution is for the party, because everyone knows
for the country.
For the country.
Right. I think so. In case anyone is mistaking my point of view on this, it's not that I'm like 100% Biden has to stay in. No, I'm focused on the election. Who is most likely to win the election and be a good president? Now, there are a lot of elements of the Democratic Party that are questioning Biden's ability, but the Democrats had their best hour of grassroots fundraising in the entire campaign the last hour of the debate. Like, it actually energized people who wanted to support Biden. Now, I haven't seen a lot of polls in the past couple weeks about the past 10 days, but like there are elements of the Democratic Party that are calling on Biden to leave, but even a doddering Biden would be better than Trump, right? I think a lot of us would agree he would be less. I mean, I wouldn't like that as you know, I don't want someone who's not capable as my commander in chief, but I am more comfortable with that than someone who is actively destructive of our democratic system.
But so right. So you, in other words, you could run a soup can against Trump and probably get 35% of the vote.
Right. Yes. And I feel like what my question is, Biden, he's I still feel like he's more likely to capture a big chunk of the voting block than someone who is less tested than he is, who's going to come out of nowhere, who hasn't been prepared for this role, who hasn't been in the spotlight in the same way. I just don't see Kamala Harris like.
Well,
capturing.
I disagree.
Kamala's looking. She's looking good.
I would also encourage you to go back and watch the Vice President Harris versus Vice President Pence debate from 4 years ago. Vice President Harris did a phenomenal job against Pence, and Pence did a really good job too. She has full command of all of the issues. She's been in the seat of the vice president. She also ran for president herself, so she is ready. And she is going to, I'm not saying she can beat Trump, but she will certainly, in my view, will do a much better job than Biden.
I don't think she has the same. I mean, I would love to see her. That would be amazing. Right. But I don't think that she, even despite everything that's happened, that she is in the position to do as well in the election as even a less capable Biden is at this
even
point.
Even a less I'm going to be careful what I say, just because I want to be clear. A Biden that we know of now, or a Biden that is even further damaged down the line? I guess that's my question.
Well, that's an unknown, though. I mean, the decision has to be made.
It's not only about him, right? I mean, so the bureaucracy of the federal government is so enormous that, and this is the complaint of a lot of our fellow citizens that you know, we want real leadership, but even if you elect someone that you think is a real leader, they end up not being able to actually change the face of government that much. There's gridlock. There's this entrenched bureaucracy, and so I don't, even if Biden is less capable, the government continues to work. It endures. There are processes, there are systems, and that's what, I mean, we all know Donald Trump wants to dismantle that.
And has a plan.
And has a plan for doing so. And so I don't think what this debate has revealed to me over the past week and a half is that there is such a bubble in the Democratic Party. I think the New York Times has been hysterical and irresponsible, and has done a disservice to American citizens. And there are voices who are not being thoughtful and just about the impact of their broader work. They're just sharing thoughts without having like a longer term plan or a vision. Like, what are we actually trying to accomplish here?
So I have one question for you, and then I have a question for Mike. My question for you is, when you talk about the New York Times being hysterical, and I'm not sure, I don't think I disagree with you, but I do
want
to—
The two editorials, the one right away and the one today. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what you're referring
yes.
to?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Because—
George H.W. Bush threw up in the lap of the Prime Minister of Japan and then fainted, and nobody said— He needs to go. I mean, it's not an exact parallel, but it wasn't. People are pouncing on this suggesting that Biden as president is going to be some disaster, which I don't think it would be, and I still think, despite all this, that he is in a better position than anyone else who is still waiting in the wings, and hasn't really. Kamala Harris. She did well in that debate against Pence, but she has not really made a name for herself as vice president.
She's been on my feed at least once a day for the last week. I don't know if they sent her out there because of what happened.
Right.
But she is out there.
But I mean, the past 3.5 years, like she just.
Agreed. But in the last week or so, she has been out there. In the last few months,
and I'm not blaming her specifically
yeah.
for her profile over the past 3.5 years.
That's the problem. Well, first, I want to just say, and I'm sorry, Mike, I know you're going next, is that no. I don't think Kamala on her own could take the place of Biden because, just to keep, I don't think a black woman can win in the U.S. yet. I'm going to just say it. I'm concerned about that. Hillary couldn't do it. I'm not sure that we're ready for a black woman to be president of the United States. Just my off-the-cuff thoughts, right? So, no, I don't think, unfortunately, I don't know if she would get those votes.
Well, and there was a lot, and I included some. I mean, as a black woman, you look at, there's been a lot of polling now of how she relates to black women, and that's interesting too of who she would get. But before we get into that, my question to you, Mike, about the New York Times. Is so not so much the hysterical, to use your word.
It was alarmist word
of the editorials. But I have found, to me, an editorial is something. It's their opinion. I think they put a lot of thought into it. I thought the first editorial was very well written. I thought it was well thought out. I thought it had while it didn't answer the big question of how are you going to do it. It certainly made a lot of good cases, and I think good cases that included this is a great president who deserves to go out on top. The thing that I find in the coverage has been this. We saw it after the George Stephanopoulos interview and the changing of the transcript and he said this word and this word was said and they keep on taking the transcripts and replaying those and you know he was not the first black woman vice president and things like that he has said but are misstatements which. He's been doing his entire political career, so that does seem to be a bit over the top.
Well, are you suggesting that the news coverage of in the New York Times of Biden in these past days have reflected the editorial position where there's supposed to be a wall?
No, I'm actually not. I'm saying that I think that the overall coverage has been a little bit just sort of over the top and maybe even separate from that of the editorial. No, I don't think that.
I mean, it clearly, just based on the press briefing yesterday and everything else, the New York Times is not alone.
Oh, God, no.
It's like raw meat. The press is going after raw meat. I mean, you could make that kind of horrible parallel, you know, sharks after raw meat or blood in the water, whatever. It does seem like that. But, when they do that, and this is the terrible double standard. When they do that with Trump and point out all these incredibly factually wrong and horrific things that Trump has said over and over again, it doesn't seem to move the button at all. But it does seem to move it against Biden. It seems to undermine what little hope people have in him being able to climb out of this and and beat beat Trump in the fall. I just have one comment, Sienna. You made a really good point today that makes me think. If it's Biden versus Trump, it de facto is Trump versus democracy. Now, I think that the only person who could replace Biden on the ticket has to be Harris. I mean, it'll be a continuation of, she's part of the administration. It would be a continuation of that, and she'd have to ride it in. I worry about her ability to succeed. So if she were to become the nominee, it would be vetting her. It would be tearing apart everything she's ever said, everything she's ever done, her failed effort to get the nomination 4 years ago, every flub, every lack of experience, how quickly she moved from the attorney general to the Senate to that. And, you know, we'd be lost in the frenzy about that. And it actually, you made the case that that Biden should stay in, and it should be Trump versus democracy, and that's the only way we can do it, because any other candidate would be a distraction from that.
I completely agree. I think what needs to happen and what's not happening is that Biden needs to bring Harris closer to him on this, you know, show that he has the support, show that he has these people backing him up instead of going on these interviews by himself. He should be with her the whole time, and they should be kind of like how he and President Obama were, but just even closer, to show that he has a support system around him. And his failure to do that, I think, is one of the failings.
The one thing, the huge difference with Kamala Harris versus anyone else, no matter how it's done, is that we, the people, actually voted on her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we elected her vice president.
We elected her vice president with an acknowledgement that if the president was not capable, that she would take over. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll get to some letters, and we'll have some more thoughts. All that and much more coming up. First, this. It's the hard-hitting political insight that you get on this program. We can do better than a banana slug. And we were having a little go-around during the break. Good morning. Welcome back. I'm Joe Donahue. Mike Spain is here. Malia DeMont, J.P. Miller. And we have Sienna Freeman-Tolbert here as well. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We would love to hear from you. What we have found over the last, 7 or 8 shows is that people want to talk about this. So let's go. Chris says, fringe elements are the only ones wanting him to step down? I am fairly middle-of-the-road voter. All of my like-minded friends who vote the same way all think he should step aside and should have never run for re-election, and we are far from fringe elements.
So that's directed at me. I, in the last presidential election, I was on Pete Buttigieg's foreign policy team, defense policy team, sorry. And I didn't think that he had a real chance at winning, but I was excited that he was a candidate, and I wanted to support that kind of younger voice, pragmatic voice. And I was disappointed that we ended. I mean, I'm glad that Biden got elected, obviously, but I was disappointed in what I saw. There doesn't seem to be a lot of investment in the next generation, or the next generation of Democratic leaders isn't as visible as I would hope. And, you know, Kamala Harris, is extremely capable and talented, and hasn't been showcased or, been as close to Biden publicly over the past couple of years as we would hope. So I'm a pragmatist in the end. And I think there are a lot of practical-minded people out there who are wondering, like, okay, so he steps down. What is the next step? Like, that's what I'm waiting for. This is why I don't agree with you, JP, that this was some kind
it's
of
an
plan
easy
for
next
him
step.
To.
He endorses his vice president to be the next president of the United States,
but he's not doing it.
He will at some point. He will, in my opinion.
It's just a very strange way to go about it. Like, I just can't believe again that his team would set him up.
Well, this gets into what I was saying earlier about you haven't left yourself a crack in the door, because you're just saying I'm in it,
right?
And I'm going to fight whoever comes anywhere near me. And you're going after people who are, you know, the.
You always hear that from politicians before they resign. The 3 days before Andrew Cuomo resigned, I'm in this. I'm not going anywhere. And boom, resign. Spitzer, all politicians don't kind of give a window saying, I'm thinking about maybe resigning in the next couple of days. I know that I'm, you know, they don't give you
but
that
window.
But all
those who stay in say that as well.
That's true. They both are true.
you know, it was, it seems as though you would have at least some, because initially the reports were in that first weekend that he, you know, he realized that the next few days were critical, that he was meeting with his family. They were going to Camp David. They were going to discover this and also have their picture taken by Annie Leibovitz. Okay. So then nothing happened, and then it seemed as though there was, I guess, they were kind of waiting each other out as to who was going to, you know, if there was a real groundswell. I mean, you could also say where were those in top seats of Democratic power, top House Democrats and Senate Democrats in those days saying, I think they wanted to give him his time and be respectful, but by the same token, so now he waited him out and.
I would say the tough thing about top Senate Democrats and top congressional Democrats is members of Congress, there are dozens of them in severe decline, you know? So they can't go and say, oh, Joe, you're in decline, so we want you to go. But Mitch McConnell, he's still there, and Dianne Feinstein, she can hang around, and Jerry Nadler, you know, they are old. I mean, who is Strom Thurmond and...
Historically, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are...
Robert Byrd.
Yeah. Senators and members of Congress hang on until literally until they're gone. So they are not in a position to say Joe Biden's in decline.
Which shows how
but even internally,
this is.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all I want to say. Go
ahead. My sister-in-law is chief of staff to a Democratic senator who is up for re-election in a swing state. And I'll just say that they have been eager to... even have more input and direction from the majority leader's office.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, CNN, when you said it earlier, that these kinds of things are conversations that are held in private. And what's going on behind the scenes, that I really believe there's a lot going on behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and we don't know which direction it's going. And you make such a good point, JP, that you're going to deny it and you're going to be defiant. You're going to be, you know, hustling the message out there like Biden is right now, like yesterday on Morning Joe, et cetera, until the minute that he steps down. And we won't know about it.
Doesn't that make it sadder?
It makes it very sad, and it's also unsettling. This has a feeling, and I remember it because I was a young journalist, older than all you guys, the summer of 1974, late July and August of 74, when it was going back and forth about what was going to happen with Nixon. Were they going to impeach him? Was he going to step down? What was, you know, was there going to be another thing released that was going to convince people that he was lying and covering up Watergate? And all of that, it was day to day. It has that feeling now, and I think Biden's people know that, and they're trying to put out that fire, but I don't think you can. I think people are waiting to hear the next thing. They're checking their phones to see the headline. They want to know what's going to happen next. Every single day when I look at the latest news, I'm wondering if something's going to be there that is going to turn.
First of all, Mike, with all due respect, especially given the aforementioned names and the topic that we're talking about, you're a kid.
Yeah. I was a very young reporter. I was right out of college, okay?
You're a whippersnapper.
Yeah.
But to the point about my let this be group therapy. I'm like, my wife and I are having a little bit of a like back and forth about this. She believes rightfully that I am spending way too much time being immersed in this story.
Has she been talking to my wife?
Yeah. There you go. See, it's just, I can't, I'm with you, Mike. I can't stop looking at my phone, reading an article, going, and then if I can't find anything new, I just go searching for like new stuff and things.
New ones.
It's there for that you. I can't you can find.
It. It's all there. It really is.
Every hour there's a new thing.
And it's, but I, yeah, it's really unsettling. And it feels as though, I will say yesterday, it seemed like things were like, okay, well, maybe a decision's been made and we're going to at least live with that. But we know that's not going to happen because the next time he stumbles or trips or anything else, we're going to be back talking about this again.
I will say, throughout this whole campaign, the voters have been concerned about this. Like I said earlier.
And the last campaign.
Yeah. And they highlighted it. And the way he came out in response was alarming to me, like, because I felt like it should have been a gentler touch rather being so bombastic about it, to say, hey, I understand you guys have concerns, I'm of a certain age. I felt like his cadence was very, it felt aggressive, it felt very and I did not like that response to your voters, your the people that are going to vote for you, their concerns. I mean, I felt like it was too much to just address it, because it's a fact, your age is a fact. And what we saw on that TV seemed like a decline. Address it. I just felt like his response was so elevated that it caused more concern to me. Like, it caused, like, why, you know, and that was my perspective.
I mean, I must say, I no longer know what a bad night means.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you lose the keys to the car and you have to look around and then you realize you put them in the dumpster. Like, that's a bad night.
Mm.
What he had seemed different. I don't know. It just seemed like perhaps something other than bad night.
It was so different that it distracted us from Trump. That's how different
right.
it was. Like,
right.
I was like, huh, yes, he's lying over there. But this guy over here, what is going on with him?
Sharks, batteries, seems fine to me. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will return right after this. Maybe a cheap shot, but I will always say that it's fascinating to me as we sit in this room for an hour or so and we talk about these issues, and no matter how you feel, they're weighty issues. We're talking about democracy, we're talking about the presidency, we're talking about the future of this country. And occasionally I will have left on, usually I turn over to a cable news network so I can sort of monitor to see if the world's falling apart. But because of our meteorologist setup, we normally have Channel 13 on, which is the NBC affiliate. And so we get Hoda and Jenna on.
Talking about summer cocktails. I saw that was the headline.
Yeah, well,
a few minutes
right.
ago.
And the one that came on just as I turned over was behind the scenes of bubble tea. And I thought, you know, we all could be doing something different.
We need more of that. We need more behind the scenes bubble tea.
I just saying. Okay, let's go to letters that people have written us. Real letters from real listeners. Here we go. Jan says, "I am aiming to send a full run." Oh no. That is not a letter for us. There we go. Now we go from a letter from us. Donna, I apologize. Sienna asserted that Harris as a black woman would not garner sufficient votes to win a presidency in America because of her race and her gender. She is right. If Hillary Clinton as a white woman could not win against Trump, there is no way that America would usher a black woman forward, even if every black person voted for her. Is this where we must acknowledge that this country has not been able to move away from its racist tendencies? Then we go to this letter from George. Joe, your wife is right. Well, let me forward that to her, George.
That's an evergreen email.
Exactly. The main reason that people are still talking about Biden's debate performance is because the electronic press won't let it go. This is very similar to what happened in the 2016 election. Focus more on the guy who wants to be a dictator and don't pretend that everybody knows this. Well, I did that too. I mean, during that election, that's certainly what I focused on. I don't know. We were worried about that. as well, I think, as evidenced by that being one of the problems that CNN saw so many people tuning in and thinking that they would be able to show this guy as a dictator, and instead people were like, oh, that sounds reasonable. We didn't think that was going to happen. Then we go to Penelope, who said, why would Biden resign before the Republican convention? Well, the Republican convention starts next Monday, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know that he's going to anyway, but I think all of this is very time sensitive, right? I mean, the sooner the better.
Yeah, I don't think he would resign before the NATO summit, which is happening now. I don't know.
There is a big news item coming up within the next week, which is who is going to be Trump's running mate.
Right. I mean, and we assume we'll know that by Monday or at the convention, we assume. Well, I guess it has to happen by the convention. All right. What about James Carville's ideas? Democrats could take a page out of the Trump book and build a lot of excitement and coverage around selecting a new candidate at the convention.
Does he recall 1968 in Chicago? And this one will be in Chicago, too. It could be complete chaos. And that you come out of a convention, a chaotic convention, ununited, and you need to come out united.
Let's see. We go to this letter from Osvaldo, who says, the majority of people I've asked do not remember any vice president. With party support, she might make a winning candidate. We weren't ready for a male black president either. Well, we were, I guess, right? In the end?
Not in the end. That's how we got Trump. I mean, that's the...
Well, no, that's true. No, that's true. But, I mean, he won two terms.
Yeah, he went two terms. He was highly successful. I mean, President Obama was, I think, in my opinion, an anomaly. I mean,
It feels like it, right?
Like, he hit all the marks at the right time. And I just don't know if that can be recreated.
Christine writes, for me, the most disturbing answer Biden gave during the Stephanopoulos interview was in response to being asked if he'd seen the debate. And he said, I don't think so. No. Wow, said Christine. I agree with that. I also, the other moment that I just, it was just sort of a moment that I registered, which was when George Stephanopoulos said, but Mr. President, no one with a 36% approval rating has ever won the presidency.
Mine was when he said, and I probably won't say it right, when he said the Lord would have to come down to take...
Yeah, the Lord Almighty.
Yes, and I was like, see, that's that arrogance we're talking about, right? Yeah. Like, right. Speak to the voters and their concerns. Don't be so arrogant about it.
So if he were to, if JP is right, and he does, and of course he is going to be. No, I don't know that. if JP is right and Biden gets out, are the first words going to be, so I'm talking to the Lord Almighty?
No, we've seen him. He's been in public life for a long time now. He is, in my belief, a good person. He is not a shameless politician. He has made the right decision time after time in his life. And I have a lot of confidence that he is going to see that this is the right decision to make.
And I think his family is going to be pivotal in that, obviously. And that's why they spend so much time really talking about this at Camp David. And Jill Biden appears to be, you know, really coming out and becoming more active on the campaign trail. So it seems like she's, I mean, at least fully on board and even trying to, you know, become more active than she was before, which, again, doesn't signal to me that they're ready to try to prevail on him or convince him that he should step aside, which is typically, I mean, what we all have situations in our families where there's, you know, or we know of people, there's an elderly person and maybe they're not fully cognizant of how they're declining or what they're, you know, how they come across. And often it's the family who can finally get through to them and say, you know, I don't feel safe having you drive the car anymore. Can I have the keys? And so I think watching Jill Biden is going to is going to tell us a lot about where this is headed.
But I do see the defiance as arrogant almost. And I think that Bob Griffin was one of the panelists last week said something interesting. He said, the family is the first to know and see decline and the last to admit it. And that's the problem here, I think, too. The people don't want to acknowledge it. The people who love him the most don't want to acknowledge it. Because like you said, JP, he's a very good person. But we all know some elderly people who were wonderful, warm people who, when sometimes this happens, when they got older and they were in a decline, they got angry and snapped and resentful of people wanting to take their keys, wanting to restrict their their activities for their own safety and get defiant about it. It's just one of the things that happens sometimes, not all the time. And I felt watching the George Stephanopoulos interview that Biden was in that denial. You know, I get a cognitive test every day. Every day I get a cognitive test. I mean, it was like, don't tell me about cognition. I know all about it. I mean, it sounded a little Trumpy. And now it sounds Trumpy. It sounds.
He's got the Trump makeup on, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy.
And,
yeah.
And then he had Joe Biden also was saying the party elite wants me to step aside. No, they don't. You are the party elite. I find that he's just angrily striking back at the people that are trying to push him. And that almost sounds like the conversation with Grandpa about giving up his keys. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really car keys. It really does.
All right, let's go to a few more letters here. David writes, 10 days of prep at Camp David? ? Debate performance zero. Damage control for 10 days post? Disastrous. Staffers leaking Biden mental acuity issues? Doubly damning. Parkinson's doctor? Partial nail in the coffin. Everybody needs to take off their rose-colored glasses. He's going to lose to a twice-impeached adjudicated rapist, 34-count felon. We need someone new. And those pauses were all sort of written in there for me with ellipses. All right, let's go to Johnny, who says there is a bubble in the Democratic Party, and it's with this administration and the party elites. Biden is losing in every poll. 70% of Democrats want him to drop out. I think that is one thing, to your point, of talking about the party elite. The party elite is pushing me out, but the people, I have gone across this country, and they keep telling me they want me in, they want me in, they want me in.
Well, yeah. There's a point to, and he gets his talking points from his staffers. They're agreed upon talking points. They want him to come out forcefully. You might interpret it as defiant and you know, cocky or whatever word you want to use. And he also goes, when you're the president of the United States and you go to an ice cream stand or wherever you go and there's a crowd of 18 people, they're excited to take their selfies and cheer you on. That is true. He is experiencing that, right?
And I'm sure there's some resentment, too, that they watch Trump say inane things, right, where he seems incapacitated all the time as well, and yet that doesn't affect him.
Hannibal Lecter.
And so I kind of understand why. I don't know if it's deliberate or not that they're trying to take that same approach. Well, he just continues to being aggressive, and so why can't Biden try doing that? It doesn't come off the same way.
But Johnny
doesn't play to the Democratic base the way Trump does.
But Johnny's point is that you hand him a piece of paper and you say, oh look, here are the new poll numbers. 70% of people want you out of the race.
But I think it was 72. No, honestly.
I know.
I think it was.
Yes.
And see, he's getting bolstered by the crowds that want the selfies and all that.
But what that doesn't say is, are all 72% of those people then not going to vote for him? Like, they want him out, and that's understandable based on what's happening. But how does that actually translate into the votes? Are those 72% of people aren't going to suddenly say, oh, well, I think I'm going to go for Donald Trump instead. It's like I think these polls are that they give a skewed sense of how the election will actually turn out. Clearly, Biden's in trouble. Clearly, he doesn't have as much of a support base as you would expect if you were looking
incumbent
for
incumbent president.
Right. But this is a unique election in so many ways. And so I don't think it necessarily, like this level of discomfort like, does it, with him as a candidate, does it translate into people saying, well, then forget it, I'm out of this election? Well, I mean, when so much is at stake, like, I'm not.
I would point you to the Siena poll before the debate, which showed that Biden was up 8 percentage points in New York. And if a sitting president is up 8 percentage points in a state, that you would classify that as a swing state. You would think of New York as now becoming a swing state. That's how poorly he's doing in the polls.
Right. But that's, you mean in terms of how they're going to vote in the election?
Polls have been historically indicative of how people vote in elections.
Yeah, I think we're in such uncharted territory. I'm not sure, given especially going back to how we started this entire conversation with Siena laying it out so clearly, this is Trump versus democracy. And I think a lot of people understand that. And so even with like this terrible debate performance, and you don't know what's going to happen next with Biden, like, are people really going to step away from Trump versus democracy? Like, that to me is what's at the heart of
this. I think if on the ballot was Trump or democracy, I bet democracy would win, but it's going to be Trump and Joe Biden. And in that case, right now, the polls are
indicating that's the argument he has to make. And we'll see if his team is able to make it in the next couple of days.
I mean, and that's exactly
it. He's got a lot of opportunities at the NATO summit, et cetera.
Exactly. And I think that's what's going to happen is that you're going to see over the next few months. And what I'm seeing is this conversation, not so much about Biden. It's not about Biden. It's about the Supreme Court and their rulings and what's coming out of that and what's happening. And so, you guys, we have to get up and get out. That's the conversation people are having. They could tuck Biden in a corner for all I care. People are going to do Trump versus democracy at the end of the day. That's how you're going to get bodies to the polls. You're not going to get bodies to the polls through Biden. I mean, that's what we were hoping for at the debate. We were hoping to get that inspiration and that to be able to rally behind Biden. We were like, oh, okay. We're not going to be able to do that. Now we have to rally behind ourselves and democracy, and we need to go to the polls to vote for that. I think that's where we're at right now, and we just need to resign ourselves to that.
And so if he does step aside and Kamala Harris is, so maybe it's not about whether the country's ready for a black woman as president in that case.
But the problem there is she'll be the
issue. Race and
gender
is so complicated. Yeah. Now you have a black woman at the forefront who's going to be elected. Now you have all these other stereotypes that comes into people's minds about what it looks like for us to have a black woman president. Now you have this whole other conversation going on when people are going to the polls. And yes, we can do the Trump versus democracy, but then you're like, oh, now we have to rely on people's biases that I think we're dealing with a little bit here. But, you know, I mean, I think it's highlighted and exasperated when it comes to race and gender in that situation.
But are people more uncomfortable with a black woman as president or a failing, declining, elderly white man as president? I mean, I'm wondering that, really.
A failing, declining white male as president.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, I mean, and that's my opinion. But I think that's what we know to be true. I mean,
that's harsh, but could well be true.
All right, let's go. In all fairness, the conversation that I've heard from just average people who engage with me on this, because my wife won't. but, you know, when you start going through the list, they'll say, well, Kamala Harris, is America ready for a black woman president? Pete Buttigieg, is America ready for a gay president?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, these are things that are all qualifiers.
The fact that they have qualifiers means that it's a difficult conversation, right?
Right.
No one says President Biden, the old white male president. No one says that, right? And so that...
You don't need to.
You don't need to.
What I would say is that is because Biden won. Before Biden won, he was a gaffe-prone, 3 times failed presidential candidate who had been a senator for 40 years. Barack Obama. What did they call Barack Obama? An inexperienced state senator from Illinois. What did he know?
A community organizer.
He's a community organizer. George W. Bush, the wealthy, dumb son of George H.W. Bush. Okay. Bill Clinton, the governor of Arkansas. What? Ronald Reagan. What? He was the actor. What? Presidents aren't came out and they were the favorite. No, they come out. Candidates always have big flaws as candidates until they win, and then they look like the king. Joe Biden, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, Barack Obama. Okay. Now in hindsight, we see they are amazing. But at the time, they all had huge flaws. My view is Kamala Harris does not have flaws as insurmountable as those other presidents had. She did. If you watch 10 minutes of that debate versus Mike Pence, she knows every issue backwards and forwards. She was poised. She was a tremendous candidate against Mike Pence. And I thought Mike Pence did really well, too. So should she become the candidate? I hope she becomes the candidate. I think that she has low expectations as a candidate. That's a really good thing to have. And my view is she will exceed those expectations, especially against an elderly Donald Trump.
One of the things that you said struck a chord with me, because I've noticed this several times, and I think we have at least one or two letters in our mailbag today that say this exact same thing, that about Kamala Harris, that she only got 1% of the vote last time. She was a failed candidate. Well, look, how many times? Biden ran three times, mm-hmm. never won. Reagan ran three times, right, before he won.
At least twice.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's sort of how that goes, I think, in a lot of cases. We have about 4 minutes and about 400 letters, but we'll only do a couple.
But I was going to say that you did highlight that we did vote for her before. So, I mean, I would love... For Vice President Harris to be president. I would love it. I'm just being a realist, and it doesn't seem feasible for me, but that would be ideal. I do think she is highly capable, but then again, I thought Hillary Clinton was too, and, you know, we saw how that turned out.
All right, let's see. I just want to say I'm about to read a letter, and the font is really big, and I think it's to make a point. Janice, I guess you didn't watch Lawrence O'Donnell last night. The doc coming in the White House 8 times was because he is the doc for the entire staff, including 1,000 military people in the D.C. who work for the White House. So the New York Times jumps to a conclusion about proper research without proper research. In addition, the White House visitor logs are 100% available to public in this administration, 0% available under the former guy. Well, here again, this is a conversation I had with my wife, but my question is, my understanding, and Mike, correct me if I'm wrong on this, the number of times only goes up to March because the records only become available to then. So this doctor could have been in the White House after March. We just don't know because those particular records, I don't think,
they're
become available
public.
Until six months after.
There's a delay.
Also, the question that seemed to be the big thing at the press conference last night is, well, why was he talking to the president's doctor? What was the conversation of having the what was the nature of the conversation, and was that because of an issue which the press secretary refused to answer? So that was the big question. But you're right, I didn't watch Lawrence O'Donnell. Okay, let's go to Deanne. The Democratic Circular Firing Squad is working again. I listened to the entire call-in from Biden yesterday to Morning Joe. He explained why it took him a while to respond. He was going many places for rallies, but he wasn't. He didn't.
The day after, he went to a couple of places.
He went to Virginia.
He went to North Carolina and then to New York to introduce, the Stonewall celebration and introduce Elton John.
And he also had fundraisers in the Hamptons. He went to Barry Rosenstein's house and read off a teleprompter at a private fundraiser in someone's home.
In a house.
Yeah. With 20 people. Yeah. But those weren't – but I believe only – one of those was public, right? One or two of those was public.
The Elton John thing, and then the rally in North Carolina was.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then he did a few events at the White House and then was not out again until Wisconsin, to my understanding. Let's get over this. The Republicans are sure together. That gives them an advantage. Poor Biden has never had a lot of support. Too bad he doesn't cry over it like Trump does. Come on. You know, it's so funny, too, because we're talking about, well, the Republicans have their act together. I mean, remember, like, you know, let's go back to the speaker's race and talk about how in lockstep the Republicans are. But understood. And let's see, we have half a minute. We'll go to Stuart, I was firmly in the president's camp after the debate. that he will be the nominee. His performance since the debate, including his comments about naps and early bedtimes and the weak interview with Stephanopoulos, has convinced me that he is not a viable candidate against Trump, and he must step aside for the good of the country. James Carville, the Raging Cajun, has a great op-ed in the Times today describing a process of town halls and an open convention. We'll stop there. We'll be right back after news. Music from the Two Funk Project, T-O-O, not T-W-O, T-O-O, Funk Project, and the playlist on our website, wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. Okay, so let's get to some other stuff. There is other news, believe it or not. I would like to talk about the GOP abortion platform. This was a story that is, you know, what are we going to do for the platform? What are we going to do for the platform? What are we going to do for the platform? Oh, we're going to do whatever Donald Trump tells us to do for the platform. Donald Trump told officials on Monday that he supports a new Republican Party platform, one that reflects the presumptive nominee's new position on abortion rights and slims down policy specifics across all areas of government. The new platform, as described to the New York Times by people briefed on it, cements Mr. Trump's ideological takeover of the GOP. The platform is even more nationalistic, more protectionist, and less socially conservative than the 2016 Republican platform that was duplicated in the 2020 election. 2020, they pretty much said, we're just going to do the same thing we did because it's already been printed. Mr. Trump, who has had the draft for several days, called into a meeting of party officials on Monday and said that he supports it. The document overwhelmingly was approved during a vote by the platform committee on Monday, passing, it's a vote 84-18, according to a person briefed on the matter. The abortion section has been softened. There is no longer a reference to traditional marriage as between one man and one woman. And there is no longer an emphasis on reducing the national debt, only a brief line about slashing wasteful government spending. The rest of the document reflects Mr. Trump's priorities as outlined on his campaign website, a hardline immigration policy, including mass deportations, a protectionist trade policy with new tariffs on most imports, and sections on using federal power to remove policies in academia, the military, and throughout the U.S. government put in place by what it describes as, quote-unquote, radical Democrats. Mike Spain.
Yeah, first of all, it should be acknowledged, and I think everybody who knows about these things acknowledge this, that platforms don't mean anything. they are a public relations, a press release, essentially, that says this or that to try to bring in certain elements that you need to support you. So they needed the Christian right very badly to win in 16. They wanted them again in 2020. And now what they need is moderates. And Trump can now say with this platform, and his supporters will say, he has modified this. He's moved to the middle. He's less, he's moved away from the wackos on the right. Well, I won't say it that way, but you know that's what they'll mean. And it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't, you know, not emphasizing national debt means I'm not gonna cut more taxes for the wealthy, but they will. They're not. I'm not gonna slash Social Security, and I'm not gonna slash Medicare, but they will try to do that. It just tells people something that they want to hear, knowing full well they don't have to do anything when they get in there.
Yeah, I agree with Mike. This is it's marketing. And I think it's inaccurate to characterize this as a softened stance on abortion. Just taking the language out, making it less specific, doesn't mean that it's softened. I mean, sending this back to the states, actually, that has been how a farther right element of the Republican Party has been able to push through the really stringent restrictions in certain states around the country. So I don't think it signals. I mean, they can say it does. That's the marketing. They can say that it's a softer approach, and then I guess that they think that'll help them appeal to centrists. But I agree entirely with Mike.
I'll just say briefly that, like you said, it's just marketing. But more importantly, no, Donald Trump won't be the one that's going to be taking stances on abortion. It's going to be the Supreme Court. And we saw that in the last decision they made, the Emtala decision, which turned on whether women would receive life-saving care in an emergency situation in states that banned an abortion. And they punted it, strategically so, until after the election. And they also, in their decision, Justice Roberts sent a roadmap on how states could bring a challenge to this ability to have life-saving care in an emergency situation. So I think it's the Supreme Court that we're going to see limiting it. So you have to open your ears, because it may not be Trump that's doing it or his administration. It might be the Supreme Court limiting our rights.
Trump, in my view, has always been someone who wants to appeal to his base rather than appeal to moderate voters. And it's hard to believe that he is going to really soften his stance and try to bring in moderates. And like Mike said, you know, this document does not matter. What matters is what you hear that comes out of the candidate's mouth. And of course, whatever you hear out of the candidate's mouth can be changed the next day or the next hour or the next week. What I thought was interesting was that they took out the part on emphasizing reducing the national debt. So there are a lot of people, a lot of voters for whom, you know, fiscal issues are what they really focus on. And people that hold out the hopes that Republicans are going to get in and they're going to get our fiscal house in order and they're going to reduce the national debt. Trump could have easily promised that and then not delivered during his presidency. Yeah. But he's now not even going to promise that. He's not even going to run on
don't you think that's entitlements debt? Mostly, you know, to older Americans worrying about Medicare and Social Security. And to me, it just kind of signals, oh, I won't touch that.
Yeah, you're probably right on that. But what you hear from the speakers next week at the Republican National Convention, you'll see stuff that varies significantly from the platform that came out yesterday. And I think that what you hear from those speakers is really what is going to start to get into voters' minds as they tune in. We all around this table, you know, really love politics and government and focus on and read about it all the time. But historically, swing voters who focus less on it tend to tune in around Labor Day and after Labor Day. And what you hear out of the speakers next week, I think, is more indicative of how voters will interpret what the platform is.
I don't actually love politics, I'll just say for the record. I like I find them maddening and enraging, and I just want to get things done. And I often find that politics is a barrier instead of an enabler to that. Happy to be in conversation with all of you about it anyway, though.
Yeah. Well, it's still fascinating, yes. Regardless.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. It's fascinating, and it never fails to, just what you said. I mean, it never fails to disappoint you.
Sometimes it can be uplifting, but I'm allergic to, like, performative approach, and I find so much of political campaigns are about being performative and not authentic, and
You know, that it's so funny you say that, because I have really been bristling at the term, because we've been using performance, the press, people, even those within the party, of when you hear on the cable news shows, the president has to give a good performance tonight. He needs to
literally
perform. He needs to perform. And we don't want the circus clown, right? I mean, you want somebody to come out and be a human being and to show what they have. And we're using that term collectively, it seems, a lot, of the performance that he has given. He had a great performance. I heard, I'm trying to think of the congressman, but they said, he had a great performance in Virginia. He had a great performance in Wisconsin. He had a great performance with Stephanopoulos, you know. It's got to be more to it than that.
You may think of it as a theatrical performance. When I hear the word performance, I think of it as an athletic performance. Michael Jordan needs to perform tonight to win the championship. I think of it as an athletic performance, and so the president needs to perform tonight to do well.
Well, one of the greatest performers we've seen as president, of course, was Ronald Reagan. and he really could perform. And if you look at history, and I think historians are saying this now, he completely changed the whole approach the federal government had. It went from, you know, the post-World War II era right up to 1980. It was government has a role to be involved with the people, and he turned it back, and it began trickle-down economy and everything. He really put us in the situation we're in right now. But people love him. He was a great performer. He could just make you feel good. And that's not Michael Jordan. That's the other kind of performance that Joe's talking about.
All right. Let's go to, let's see, I think we have time for one more topic before we head out this morning. And I guess that just address it very quickly, but meanwhile, in France, they're trying to figure out what's going on, too, and they're having a time. The headline in the New York Times today, France learns a new word, ungovernable.
Far ungovernable.
From, Very nice. Far from producing a clarification, President Emmanuel Macron's snap election has yielded a muddle that could take months to sort out. This is not what we had plan, right, Malia?
Right.
So what do we what do they do in this situation?
There's going to be a lot of coalition building, but I think the country is there's going to be a period of reassessment, because I think the country is surprised to realize how fractured they are, and some of these parties that have more seats in now haven't been as present in the government recently. So you're going to see a lot of new faces in France. But it seems like overall, the overall direction of the government is not going to change drastically. The far right did win more seats than they've had before, but it's not going to be the drastic turn to the right. One of the big questions is going to be how much is this larger rightward bloc going to try to gum things up? And how much gridlock are they going to experience in France from this now?
Mike?
Well, the encouragement that people are getting out of the results in France is that they thought the right wing would, the Le Pens, would get a majority or so much representation that they could call the shots. And that did not happen. It was kind of a coalition of disparate other people that came out to block that. Now they have to figure out how to govern, but it was encouraging. And it almost has a parallel here, going back to what we were saying. You know, people may possibly be united to push against Trump and not reelect him or not elect him to another term, but it's still very fuzzy. You know, it's not a definitive direction that we're going after that. We just turned away from Trump if that were to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure the Biden campaign is watching this very closely.
Very closely, yeah. But the trouble is Macron is a lot sharper, and he took a big gamble and won in a way. You know, I don't know if that will happen this time in the U.S.
JP?
I haven't followed it as much as I should, Joe. I didn't do my homework on it.
That's all right. That's okay. That was a
your
very
performance
nice
just didn't make it.
Yes.
You're not performing.
Yeah,
well.
You're not performing well. You know, but I think that's also a point of do you have anything to say on this, or would you like to go the JP route?
I'm not going down with JP. Hold it together here.
All right. Well, on that note, let's end this thing. My thanks to everybody and for being so great. And whether you've done your homework or not, we appreciate you being here and adding so much to the conversation. A reminder, we'll be at Tanglewood tomorrow and broadcasting live from the grounds of Tanglewood. And we'll be back with the panel on Thursday morning. Mike Spain, Malia Dumont, JP Miller, and Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, thank you all very much. We'll be back right after this.